These will be work sessions. The bills that we have on the schedule today are bills that have all had hearings, public hearings previously. We'll have discussion for each one amongst the committee, and if there's people here that we would like to call on to get further information, we'll do that. Each one of these, and I want to ask the committee, at least for the next 3 days, it's really imperative that we're here on time and that we're ready to go. We have a lot of bills to get through, and they'll move quickly because they're work sessions, so they'll move fairly quickly, and we may not have to stay till 4:30 each day, but we should start on time. So. Representative Backlund, come in. Okay, we'll go into a work session on House Bill 2688. Mr. Peel, would you like to come up and just... And as Mr. Peel's coming, the administrator will give us a summary of the bill.
Robin Peel, I'm a retired teacher, and I represent New Backman with this bill. I'm also 688, re-title it early graduation. Thank you for this opportunity. The bill proposes that funds more efficiently used to help the college expense of certain students. A newborn in Oregon has K through 12, 15 years. Subsidized education in the bank at birth. With more years you needed to achieve a high school certificate, they will be furnished. Misbehavior, lack of effort, illness, none of these are qualified. If, however, the student is ambitious, organized, studious, and earns a certificate of advanced mastery, not bad there, several other possibilities, in 9, 10, 11 years, that financial support ends. My question, shouldn't these students have available to them at the state colleges the remaining years of support they would have received if they had been less accomplished in diligence? State education has changed and is advancing to where it has now become a continuum. The majority of its financial coming from the rather than locally as it was historically. This bill has three winners. Would you like to have a...
Actually, Mr. Peel, we've had your testimony on this. If you just had any final comments, that's what we were interested in, and give Representative Backlund an opportunity to make a comment before we actually go into voting on this.
Okay, I have nothing more to say at this time.
Okay. Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Chair Sinceri, and members of the committee. Thank you for letting me appear today and testify to this bill. Mr. Peel, one of our constituents in Kaiser, has asked me to introduce this bill on his behalf, and I was only too happy to do so because I think, again, it's kind of a provocative idea. It's kind of an idea that deserves examination. And there has been another bill, the one sponsored by the Associated Oregon Industries, that is somewhat similar to this. And so we think the idea has a lot of merit, and any reworking of the bill in terms of specifics, I think we're open to. And so I'm here to support Mr. Peel and to urge your consideration. Thank you.
Okay, committee, we are in work session, and we're open to a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Knoop.
I'll move House Bill 2688 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Knoop moves House Bill 2688 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion?
I have
Representative Close?
Thank you, Chair. I think it's unfortunate that they're not including a GED along with a diploma, because there are homeschool students who take the GED at 16 and receive that and then go on to college, and I understand they would not be eligible for this.
Are you asking me?
No, she's not.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Did you want to ask that question?
Well,
if they would consider that, because the bill doesn't provide for it.
No, it doesn't.
We can ask if they, would object to that change when it gets to the Senate side. Mr. Peel, would you object to that change if it gets to the Senate?
We see GED or homeschooling, either one, as being valid approaches to this.
Okay. So it's something that could be addressed on the Senate side.
All right.
Other discussion? Representative Hopps?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be voting against this bill for a number of reasons. The first of which, I would like to say to Mr. Peel, I applaud and laud the idea of encouraging students to finish early if they're so inclined. And I think that should, if it works out well for students, that should happen. But the idea then of taking money from local school districts to then give to and to provide them the opportunity to use that at higher ed is just one more taking from the local school districts, and I just can't support that at this point.
Representative Morissette.
Well, I guess I'm, thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Representative Hobson. Until I see a budget for K-12, I can't support this. After the budget for K-12 comes out, I might be able to, but at this time I can't.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jensen.
Just a point of clarification. I don't think I'll be able to vote for the bill, but as it stands here, completed instruction in kindergarten through 12th grade, must they have gone to kindergarten?
Mr. Peel?
If kindergarten is part of customary and it must be that, I would say yes. Otherwise, no. But I see that a lot of these points that are being brought up seemed like they were too minutiae to be in the bill, but should certainly be included in the administrative rules that were to cover this. And so we had seen a number of those things as being best left to the experts who arranged how this financing would be done.
Thank you. That's
Representative Winters?
Did we hear any opposition from
I don't recall. Mr. Fox, do you recall if we had opposition from the districts on this? Do you have it in your notes? Representative Winters, question.
If there was opposition from
anyone? Right.
No.
No opposition.
Further discussion? Clerk will call the roll. Excused.
Aye.
President Hobson?
No.
President Jensen?
No.
President Hill?
Aye.
President Morissette?
No.
President Starr?
Aye.
President Wilson?
Aye.
President Winters?
Aye, hearing no opposition from the district.
Chair Sinceri?
Vote aye. Motion is adopted. Representative Beck will carry that, or excuse me, Representative Backlund will carry that bill. Okay, we will go to a, excuse me, thank you. Okay, we're going to go into a work session on House Bill 2992. The administrator will give us a review.
House Bill 2992 allows the State Scholarship Commission to grant awards or to award grants to students attending either profit or nonprofit institutions of higher education in Oregon, starting with the coming school year. Specifies that the headquarters of the higher education institution need not be within the state to make the student eligible for grants. providing the school attended is within the state. As you see on the summary there, we've talked about some issues, including whether the current scholarship programs are adequately funded, the equity issues surrounding excluding a category of students from the scholarship program. In this case, that would be students who are intending to attend an institution of higher education that is for profit, and then the possibility of more funding becoming available for the scholarship programs.
Questions? Representative Morsat.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a the fiscal impact I have in my notes, $1.8 million, is that, did we have that figure?
Actually, I don't think we had a fiscal.
Maybe that's a different figure or something else. Do we have, pardon?
That is the fiscal.
$1.8 million, then I have $4 million. Is there coming into system? Is there another figure that I didn't.
I don't see the four.
I don't either.
Okay, so 1.8 additional dollars that would have to go to the scholarship commission to cover that. Are we going to send this to Ways and Means? I mean, is that the next step with a?
Is it, it does not have a referral.
It has a 1.8.
Well, may I?
Please.
I guess I'm a little bit, I like the idea. I think that it's important that we do provide additional scholarship. There are people who do qualify for the NEED grant who are not being funded because of lack of funding. And I'm wondering if there's not money appropriated, where this is going, which pocket it's going to come out. So that's my concern.
Well, Mr. Corey, why don't you come up and you can. I don't want to get into all these people.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Stephen Kafori. I'm representing the University of Phoenix and the Oregon Coalition of Career Colleges. And the short answer to the question, does this need to go to Ways and Means? No, it does not need to go to Ways and Means. It's purely a policy issue. The only reason we would need to go to Ways and Means is if you're going to be getting some money from somewhere else, and this is not, this bill doesn't have anything to do with where the money's coming from, where the money's, it just talks about where the money's going to, and it just makes more people eligible who are not eligible now. There is going to be more money that we know about in the system, and we know roughly what it's going to cost, but we don't need to deal with that issue in this bill.
Ren.
Chairman, for the record, Grant Terrence, representing the Oregon University System, we signed up today in anticipation of speaking to the bill because only the proponents were heard at the first time it was posted, and I think they'd like to be heard also, and we would address it normal course if you were to call the witnesses.
We called you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe I'm the designated hitter for the batter for the folks who signed up today. The bill needs to go to the Ways and Means Committee and can't be supported by any of the folks who signed up on the bill unless it goes there. We have had for a long time in matters dealing with the Oregon State Scholarship Commission, the community colleges, public higher education, and private nonprofit higher education followed a rule which we have learned over many years to honor, and that is, first, do no harm. Do no harm to one segment or the other when advancing amendments to the NEED grant, its formula, the funding level, maximum grant, or any of the other factors which go into this. It's, it can be very complex. So we have followed that for a number of sessions now very successfully, in which we have joined forces to support amendments to the budget, increase it, and increase levels of grant for individual sectors, but not by taking from one to give to another. Mr. Corey's bill says he will take from community colleges, public higher education, and the not-for-profit private colleges in Oregon, and give to a fourth entity, for-profit, proprietary colleges and schools that would qualify in Oregon. The policy decision is, A, should that happen, and B, if it should, then how is it to be funded? You can grapple with the first policy question, but we're all materially involved in the second one. It ought to be funded from an increase to the State Scholarship Commission budget in order to do no harm. It would take away from a grant to students now enrolled in community college, OUS school, or Independent College Association member.
I'll be honest, my concern with the bill is, I think, is the grants to the students. So let me ask the question, are you comfortable with this bill leaving this committee and going to Ways and Means?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Ann Dean, would you come up?
May I respond, Mr. Chair?
Certainly.
First of all, I think you made the point very clear. None of this money goes to the schools. It doesn't go to private schools, it doesn't go to public schools, it doesn't go to community colleges. It goes to students. And if you're excluding a group of students, then that's unfair. And all this bill says is that that's unfair, and we want to clarify and correct an unfairness. In terms of taking money away from anybody, there's more money coming into the system this year, twice as much money as this bill would potentially cost. So you're not taking any money away from any students by passing this bill, regardless whether it goes to Ways and Means or not.
And my primary question, unless someone else on the committee has another question, Mr. Randy, is if you're comfortable with this bill leaving this committee and going to Ways and Means.
The policy issues, we're totally in favor of supporting students, but we also feel that it needs to go to Ways and Means. The Scholarship Commission can give you the hard numbers on what this bill will cost, and they're here to do that today.
Any other questions from the committee for Mr. Randy? Thank you. Woody?
Chairman Cesari, committee members, my name is Woody Farber, Executive Director of the Scholarship Commission. Number one, I must correct a misstatement that was put into the record at the last hearing on this bill, the first hearing on this bill. The Scholarship Commission has not taken an official position on this bill. The position they took was in regard to the generic question that you raised, Chair Cesari, and that is, are we in favor of all students participating in the grant program? And the answer to that is yes, of course we are. But the funding level is what we have to worry about. If there is no funding, if the $1.8 million is not attached to this bill, then the 15,500 students currently receiving need grants by the needs of the needy will see their grants go down somewhere between 3 and 4% next year. And we feel that's a disservice to those students that are currently in the system.
You're okay with this going to Ways and Means?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Amara? Kathy Campbell? Christine Reed?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tamara Dykman, representing Oregon Community College Association. With me today is Kathy Campbell. She's the financial aid director at Chemeketa Community College. We can be very brief. We're in favor of this bill going to Ways and Means, and we would oppose it if it goes straight to the floor.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I wanted to talk about this bill. Oh, for the record, my name is Kathy Campbell, and I'm the financial aid director at Chemeketa Community College. I wanted to talk so bad that I came three times before the bill got heard, and now I don't have a voice when it's my turn. So I don't normally sound like this, and I apologize. We want you to know that last year, out of the 4,500 eligible but unfunded students currently in the NEED grant program, 3,500 of those are community college students. So there's a significant portion of our students that over the last many years have been affected adversely by that program not being fully funded. Of course, we have a concern about that. I've been here over the last four sessions to talk about that and how that might change, but we do have a concern about adding more students that are eligible unless the money comes with those people. And so we also have a concern about the fact that if community college students don't get grant money, they end up taking out more loan money and the effects that has on them. So I'm starting to fade, and I'm going to turn it back over to tomorrow, my understudy.
Oh, I just wanted you to know that Christine Reed, she's a representative of the Community College Students, is going to be here But she just couldn't make it in time, and she has submitted testimony. They have the same position as us. And just real briefly, on the back of my testimony is a graph that shows that community colleges borrow nearly twice the national average currently because of the need grant problem. So we'll leave you with that. Thank you very much for the chance to testify.
Thank you. Steve Goldman.
My name is Stu Colton. I'm the president of the Art Institute of Portland. I'm here in support of this bill. I'd just like to say again what Mr. Choi said very well, that on the policy issue, the question is equity and whether funding levels have to change. I fully support the new grant program. Is to me a different question. I urge your passing this measure simply on the merits of the equity question. All students in Oregon, for example, at my institution, 86% of our students are from Oregon. Small school, this need grant aid to these students to materially affect their lives.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Winters. Where to work session?
There's no further discussion. I move House Bill 2992 to waste needs.
Representative Winters moves House Bill 2992 to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there a discussion? Clerk, call the roll. Representative Jensen, I'm sorry.
Any recommendation on that or just move?
With a due pass.
With a
due pass recommendation, okay. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Beck.
Excused.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Hobson.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Morissette?
Aye, with a due fund recommendation.
Representative
Starr? Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Winters?
Aye.
Representative Sherry?
Votes aye. The motion is adopted. We will go into a work session on House Bill 2370. Cindy Hunt? Somebody somewhere on that?
House Bill 2370 directs school districts to admit non-resident students who attend grades 9 through 12 if space is available.
Okay, we are in a work session. I asked legislative council to be here in the event that any of the committee members have questions about this. We are open for motion. Representative Morissette?
Yeah. This is unrestricted transfer, right? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this unrestricted transfer as long as there is a vacancy? Now, is vacancy defined?
Cindy Hunt, Legislative Council's Office for the Record, Mr. Chair. Representative Morissette, that's correct. As long as there is space available, then it's unrestricted. And it also has to be for academic reasons, which is then defined by the State Board of Education.
Okay. May I guess I have a problem with the definition of space available, depending is, you know, if it's, the school district has worked very hard to have a very, you know, good teacher-student ratio, a low student-to-teacher ratio, and another district assumes that they have lots of room because, or a student assumes there's room there, I would have a problem with that. And I don't know how that's dealt with.
It wouldn't be based on the student's assumption, would it? It would be based on the actual numbers.
Not necessarily. What could happen underneath the bill is that if a student applied to a school district and the school district says, no, we do not have space available because we have a teacher-to-student ratio or whatever reason they give, then the student would then be denied admission basically by the district school board, and then they can appeal that decision to the State Board of Education. It would ultimately be the State Board of Education's decision.
Well, we're in work session, so I guess I could give an opinion. I guess my opinion would be that it has to be reciprocal. Under the present statute, reciprocity is what determines transfers. And as I mentioned one other time, I think it was in response to Representative Knope's concern or that students ought to be able to move. Each district relies on bond measures to finance their public school system, and the parents of a student who can arbitrarily transfer into that district, I think, sidesteps the equal pay that now exists in the district. Through reciprocity, that's mitigated by simply exchange of students, but I have a concern for the funding mechanism of infrastructure. Until that's equalized on it by a statewide measure, I couldn't possibly support this. If we ever come up with statewide equalization on building, on capital expenses, then I think it's a wash. Then students can go anywhere. But as long as districts have to collect taxes from their residents to build the buildings, I don't think it's fair for a student from outside to arbitrarily transfer into that district. So I would oppose the bill as it's written.
Further discussion? Representative Hobson.
Thank you. I have a question, first of all, Cindy. On page 2, lines 1 through 14 are deleted, correct? In the dash 2 amendments, it says that.
Representative Hobson, Chair Sinceri, the reason they're deleted is because the entire ORS 339.115 is put into the amendment. So the provisions that you see at the top of page 2 are still contained at the top of page 3 in the amendment.
Good. That's just.
And there have been no changes aside from renumbering the subsection.
That had me panicked, and that only takes.
You're okay.
Right. Well, I'm not okay with the bill. No, misunderstand. but if that's answered, at least I want to address that part to it. I very much oppose this bill. I think that there are some ramifications that will come from it that are not only unintended, but are probably illegal. And contrary to what most of you would think about me, I'm looking at interscholastic athletics. I think we open up a can of worms here that is unbelievable as far as interscholastic activities are concerned. And I say that with the understanding that academic reasons are the only ones that are to be used in order to go to another school. Well, I've been around long enough to know that as a star athlete, my son needs to go to a particular high school in order to take calculus. He happens to be an outstanding basketball player, but that won't be the reasons. And I'm very concerned that academic reasons is not defined. And if the definition is going to be in the eye or of the person who wants to go or the district that wants the star athlete, I think those things are very, very problematic. So I think space available and academic reasons, I concur with what my good colleague from Springfield said in regard to the bonding. My community supports education to the point where they build the wonderful school as was described in Grants Pass, and guess what? The other kids, students from families who didn't put in to pay for that facility, will be coming to that facility for any number of reasons, be it technology, gyms, science rooms, any of those kinds of things. So I think there are a whole lot of things that are very problematic there. I think that ultimately, if we set up a system where any child can go to any school in the state, that certainly isn't out of the realm of possibility. But I believe that this bill is premature. It doesn't answer the questions that have really come up. And I think it also has surfaced because of some unique individual circumstances. I know that in some of the districts with which I've been familiar, two districts right next door to each other, one of them had to cut all the music, and I mean all of the music and all of the counselors. The students in that district would have loved to have gone next door. Now, I realize it says space available, but does that mean that because I, as a school district, have 18 or 20 to 1, that there is space available because I could, should, and might be mandated to have 22 to 1? So I'm very much against this in concept and particularly the way that it's written.
Cindy, are we doing anything illegal with this bill?
Illegal?
Well, Representative Hobson said she wondered if maybe some of it wasn't
on the
illegal.
Athletic part is the part where I think we would end.
I want to know if we're doing anything illegal.
Not that I know of.
Thank you. Representative Jensen?
A couple of things and some observations and a question. First of all, and I respectfully disagree with Representative Hobson in relationship to the athletics. As a matter of fact, I probably would oppose any bill that didn't allow for that, because I see that as a frequently very much as the same part of education that, and if education is to provide us for a lifelong situation and is to provide us for a career in life, you know, we had a young man many years before my time, but transferred into Pendleton High School on kind of some manipulation of things like this. His name was Bob Lilly. His father was very interested in his playing football at a high school that had a good football program. Bob Lilly's record now stands for itself, and football was, in fact, education for Bob Lilly. And, you know, we could go down. There are several people that are currently bouncing or have been bouncing the ball in the NBA out of the Portland area that bouncing the ball was. Now, I, having said that, I do understand that sometimes we have athletics wagging the tail of the dog of education. So, but so much for the tirade on that, and my respectful disagreement with my esteemed colleague. The issue or the concern I have, maybe Norm can help me. What has been the OSBA's position on the bill? I don't remember anything.
I'm...
House Bill 2370. Mr. Marshall, you want to come up?
We have a...
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Marshall representing the Oregon School Boards Association. We do not support House Bill 2370.
Representative Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some real strong concerns about this bill, primarily due to wealthy districts and poorer districts, and when they're juxtaposed next to one another, the opportunities for students to jump from the rich or from the poor school to the rich school. And the money following with them will just make the poor schools all that more poor and that much harder for them to keep their doors open. That's probably the primary concern that I have, though, the issues that have been raised about taxpayers supporting a certain school and then having to support other kids coming in also is a concern to me. As a courtesy to the chair and the sponsor of this bill, though, I will support the bill moving to the floor.
Representative Byer, any comments?
Could I just make a clarification in case I didn't? Because I am very supportive of interscholastic sports, and I certainly didn't mean to give that. What I meant that schools will recruit in order to make them have the best state champion football. I'm sorry.
Representative Morrison?
Okay, I guess I need to reiterate my position on this, which is kind of in between my colleagues. I think if a sport is not available in a school district, then I would approve the transfer based on that. But otherwise, academics, and otherwise, reciprocity.
Representative Byer, what would you like to make?
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Roger Byer, State Representative of District 28. I am simply here to answer any questions that may be posed to me by the committee. And
any further discussion? Clerk, call the roll. Oh, I guess we got to have a motion.
Yeah.
Representative Close.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 23.
First, we have the dash two amendments.
Oh, I'm sorry. I move the dash two amendments be into House Bill 2370.
Representative Close moves the dash two amendments into House Bill 2370. Is there objection? No objection?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2370 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Close moves House Bill 2370 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Beck is excused. Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Hobson.
No.
Representative Jensen.
No.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative
Morrison? No.
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye. With notice that I'll have to...
consider this further before voting. Aye on the floor.
Aye. You voted aye.
President Winters?
Aye with the same serious consideration.
Chair Terry?
That's aye. Motion is adopted. Representative Byer will carry the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair? Since all the ayes said they might consider, do the nays get the same opportunity to say they might reconsider?
Absolutely.
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 It turns out to be a Christmas tree bill.
Okay, we'll close the work session on the 2370, and we will go. House Bill, I'm going to work session on House Bill 2371. Representative? Nope, that's Byer as well. I'm sorry. I apologize. Looking at one and reading the other. Of 2371. Representative Byer.
I'm in the committee. Roger Byer, State Representative, District 28. Before you is House Bill 2371. Are you in work session or?
In work session.
Okay. The bill has been heard before. There are no changes proposed to the bill that I know of. So I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. It's been a while since the bill was in January when you first heard the bill.
Questions of the committee? Would like a summary from the administrator? Go ahead.
This bill authorizes school district boundary change that would divide a school district into smaller school districts.
And let's let council's here if the committee has any. Representative Starr.
Thanks. I'm just a question. What kind of process the local school district would have to go through? What could citizens petition? Does the school board have to act? I wasn't here in January. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, but happy to let Cindy Humphrey, ladies of the council. I can give Representative Starr my version of what would happen, but she could give you the exact version.
I found myself in that position several times.
Representative Starr, Chair Sinceri, I had to look at the bill again because honestly I haven't looked at it in a couple of months. The district boundary board, on request of the school district board of an affected district, or on petition of 5% or 500 of the electors of the affected district, whichever is less, would change the boundaries of the school district by dividing the school district into smaller school districts. Then in other provisions in the bill, there is allowed, I believe, where you can petition, and it could go to the...
Perhaps the only petition provision is the one there in sub 4, section 1.
Does this, if I read that right, does it say that it shall change, so 500 people can change, can make the...
No, see, I think that, actually, if I could get a copy of volume 7 back there, I think it's actually an existing law that if you have a boundary change, that you have the option.
Mr. Chair, Representative Starr, the way it was presented last time, the way I believe this will be referenced, this simply references the statute for the current changes of boundaries, which this petition would require the school board to call in, to put out for a vote of the residents in the district, and it would take a majority of the residents in the district then to approve the boundary change.
And that would be the residents of the district, of the consolidated district, not the...
The current district that is there. The other entity is no longer a district.
Okay. What current law has, and So once this would take place, it would become a boundary change under ORS Chapter 330. So then those provisions would apply to the provisions in the bill, unless they're changed by the bill, is that if once the district boundary board does the order as kind of described in Section 1, then if a remonstrance petition on a proposed change or merger is signed by at least 5% or 500 electors of the school district, then it can be sent to the voters. But if not, then the order goes into...
Just to clarify, Mr. Chair, does it require a vote in order for this thing to work, or can the schools...
I don't believe it requires a vote, no. Because if no remonstrance petition on the change is submitted, the board may issue the order they just go ahead and issue the order then.
Further questions? Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We may have covered this before and perhaps have forgotten. My recollection is that there's only one school in the state that is interested in doing this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, no school has approached me about being interested in doing this.
Oh, well, we did have testimony from
you. The last session, we passed a bill that this bill is attempted to mirror that did allow one school to divide. That was Senate Bill 715. Mm-hmm. And that, to best of my knowledge, I guess that school probably has divided into two smaller entities.
Representative Hobson, Chair Sinceri, that's correct. I think that was Columbia District 5J.
Yeah.
And when last I spoke to those, they were kind of proceeding under the bill. I don't know if the change is final yet. Mm-hmm.
Further discussion? Okay, we're open for a motion.
Mr. Chair?
Representative?
I move House Bill 2371 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Starr moves House Bill 2371 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion?
Chair.
Representative Beck?
I'm sorry I've been gone at another hearing, but I have a little district in my district that would probably be very happy to have this bill. However, I don't have anything in my file from, I know this is a complicated issue, and I have not heard from governor's office or other school boards or school districts, or I'm big enough deal, I'd kind of like to get some information of what people who would be involved with these sorts of mergers or demergers have to say, and it's been so long since we had a hearing on this, I'm uncomfortable. I'm going to vote no, but I have a particular district, Riverdale, that would probably utilize this bill.
Yeah. Representative Hobson.
Thank you. I'll be voting against this bill. I think that it is being done for what I now realize are two districts in the state. I had forgotten about Riverdale, and I think that it takes away from the hard work that was done here before in unifying school districts. It also sets up the potential, and correct me if I'm wrong, Cindy, for K-8 districts, which is something that we moved away from in order to have a unified K-12 district.
Mr. Chair, I think I can answer that. Currently, we have a law in the books still that this bill does not repeal requiring all school districts to be K-12.
Okay.
It would require the newly formed district to be a K-12 district.
Okay. But I will be voting against it because I think it opens up the door to have a number of districts, and I haven't seen any reason or purpose brought forth to do that, or that how that would benefit anybody at any time, or that anybody other than the one mentioned before really wants it.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. I'm going to vote for this. I think this bill has a tremendous amount of curb appeal. And I look at a very large, far-flung district in my own legislative district. There's such a lack of cohesion within that rural district that I'm not sure that a bond measure will ever pass ever again to rebuild infrastructure, because it's hard to get people in the far north part of the district to vote for a bond measure to build a school that is 50 miles away that they have no connection to whatsoever. And this particular district has the ability to have two separate K through 12 districts, and it looks like I would think a great option for this particular district to have. I think that is the only hope to be able to pass bond measures as people begin to look at these schools as their neighborhood schools once again. I think this is a perfect opportunity to utilize.
Representative Morissette.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is really a testimony to hearing something at the very end that makes you change your mind. And my mind has changed, because I guess I misunderstood, and I thought that this would allow maybe just an elementary to break away. I thought this was a reversal of the unification. But because it would allow, they would have to be K-12, then I don't see it as a reversal of unification. And if I had spoken before my good friend from Southern Oregon, I would have said the same thing. I think that there are what could be a viable K-12 district, and I think we heard from Representative Kropp, and we'll probably hear again from him, that in Lebanon, for instance, there are far-flung schools, and there's no way they're going to pass a bond issue for that, for the same reason that people don't want to support somebody else's schools. But if a smaller K-12 district could form and become viable and build the facilities, I think that would be great. So for that reason, I guess I will support the bill.
Further discussion? First, call the roll.
Representative Beck.
No.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Hoffman.
No.
Representative
Jensen. No, with no guarantee for this vote.
Representative
Close.
Aye.
Representative Morissette.
Aye, with a last-minute conversion.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Winters.
Aye. Representative Perry. Aye. Motion passed. Representative Morissette, would you like to
carry
that?
Oh, I'd love to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Morissette.
And we will close work session on 2371, and we will go to a work session on House Bill 2683. Representative Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's, again, my pleasure to come before you today. And as you know, putting in a marathon session today is our good friend Cindy Hunt from Legislative Council. You have before you our bill on school improvements, which segues very nicely into what you were just talking about. And Representative Morissette certainly, again, brought forth the issue, the reason that we're here. is for that very reason. Again, we have several amendments here, including up to the dash fives now. And probably the greatest reason that we have Cindy here is to explain your very pertinent question, Mr. Chair, in regards as to why is it necessary for us to actually produce a new law. You don't have the fours and fives. Well, I guess we need to get you the fours and fives in. My apologies. I thought that had occurred.
I have a copy.
Yes, please.
2683, you've got amendments.
Basically, Mr. Chair, what they address is adding the word corporations in addition to foundations, in case corporations were interested in facilitating this type of a school improvement. And also, the reasoning, when I was getting into that just a moment ago, is you asked, why do we need to do this? Well, I had indicated previously that there were a couple of reasons, one of which was that state law precluded a school district from selling property at anything less than fair market value. I am incorrect. I've been corrected on that issue. However, there is another law that it is important that we clarify. If we're going to have this type of a scenario, it's important that it deals with the public contracting laws, and that is what Cindy is here, and she has a copy of the current statute, and she'll explain that for you. She'll hand those out to you right now.
Now, this addresses the concern that the Oregon School Board shared with us after the hearing. Is that correct? All this was available to do at present, and you're going to tell us that that's not the case.
That is correct.
Okay.
As Norm is handing out the statute, I made a copy of the statute that I believe Oregon School Boards Association cited to, and you can see the statute is generally dealing with the property that the school district holds. And you'll notice I put stars next to the relevant subsections that may affect what the subject of the bill. And in particular, if you take a look at subsection 6, it allows the district school board to sell property of the district in transactions whereby the district has the right to lease, occupy, or reacquire the property following the sale or have facilities constructed or furnished to the specifications of the district. And that sounds very much like the bill. But then the next sentence says, the construction or furnishing of such facilities shall be subject to, and this is the competitive bidding requirements under Oregon's public contracting law. So when we get the Dash 5 amendments back, what they do is they very specifically say that if an agreement between the community foundation or corporation meets the requirements of the bill, then this section, this subsection 6, does not apply to that school facility project. Also, public contracting law does not apply to that school facility project.
So the schools are going to become fixer-uppers for the community, and they're going to do the work themselves, and they won't be subject to the competitive bidding law. Is that correct?
That's correct, under the Dash 5 amendment.
Okay.
Again, Mr. Chair, if we're going to move in a direction of this nature, I think it's important that we codify in the statute a number of things, and that's what the amendments do in terms of specifying that under this scenario, again, a portion of the money that the foundation would receive be set aside as a permanent maintenance fund. I think it's important that we note that. It also puts a timeline on when the project must be completed. I think it's also important that we do that. But specifically in terms of the of allowing the language of corporations to be part of this in addition to private foundations and certainly the public contracting law of competitive bidding.
Okay, so what we need then is the fours and the fives. Is that correct?
Actually, all five, Mr. Chairman, 1 through 5 amendments.
So the 1, 2s, and 3s are not incorporated into the fours?
No, they are not. No. The 1s, 2s, 3s, 4s, and 5s are all separate amendments, and I don't believe any of them are really in conflict with one another, so the committee could choose to adopt all of them or any one of them, or none of them.
You want to give us a summary of each one of those then?
Mm-hmm.
Just so the committee, because it's been a while since we had the hearing.
The Dash 1 amendment would put an additional requirement that the school district could only enter into the agreement with the community foundation if the question had been submitted to the voters to incur bonded indebtedness and had been rejected 12 months prior to entering into the agreement.
Any questions?
Okay.
Representative Winters.
Cindy, Dash 1, can we currently do that without the Dash 1?
Can we currently? Representative Winters, Chair Sinceri, can we currently do what's contained in the Dash 1 amendments? Yes. Or the district could choose not to submit the question to the voters and just proceed under the provisions of the bill. So the question is, or I guess the policy decision underneath the Dash 1s is whether or not you want an additional requirement that if the district's going to proceed under these provisions, that they must submit it first to the voters.
Mr. Chair, the and Representative Winters, the thought there was that it would give all of the stakeholders in this type of a situation an opportunity first, a requirement that they try for a bond measure, and which I think we all recognize is a more palatable and appropriate way to approach this subject.
Well, it seems like it's certainly an innovative way that may help communities. Representative Wilson, question?
No, thank you.
Ready for a motion, Mr. Chair?
Yes, and what we'll do is we'll do each amendment individually.
Okay, I would move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2683.
Representative Scar moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2683. Is there a discussion? Representative Hobson.
I want to make sure I understand, if I could. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What we're saying here is that no school district can enter into this kind of an agreement unless they've had at least one failed bond election.
Yes.
Further discussion? Representative Morissette.
Why?
Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Morissette, for the reason I just enunciated, is that it's always, in my view, it's a much more proper scenario for school districts to go out for a bond and pass it in that manner and operate a construction project under the auspices of a bond, because I think it's going to happen a lot sooner. It'll reach the ultimate goal that a school district is looking for, and this means that a school district will have had to have gone that route of running a campaign and going door to door and talking to their friends and neighbors about the need, and if for some reason, because of the reason that Representative Wilson brought forth, you have a very large school district and some folks don't feel that that's appropriate, then we need a fallback position sometime.
I understand what you're saying. I guess, and we discussed this originally, it depends on the size of the project. And I could see some projects who are going out for a bond issue wouldn't be necessary. The people in the community come together and say, let's raise money. Of course, they can do that. But I think under your bill, I don't think that they should be precluded. It's not a big issue. But I could see instances where it wouldn't be necessary to do the bond first.
Representative Morissette, the other thing also to keep in mind is that the statute I handed out in the subsection 6, we're not repealing that, so that mechanism still exists, and then the portion of the public contracting laws would apply to that, so the districts would sort of have two options.
Further discussion on the dash one amendment?
Well, just another point of clarification. Mm-hmm. If the school district does the remodeling themselves or through volunteers, they don't have to comply with Little Davis Bacon, right? If they do it.
Representative Morissette, Chair Sinceri, in general, public contracting laws in Oregon apply to school districts. School districts are considered to be a public contracting agency.
With volunteer.
That I would have to look into further.
Representative Hobson.
Clarification to that, if I might. I think Cindy's right if you contract something out, but it doesn't mean that the school district has to pay its maintenance person the same that they would pay a contractor. So Representative Morissette is right in that an employee of the school district does not need to meet the regulations by Davis.
Correct.
Further discussion on the dash ones? Is there objection to the dash ones? They're adopted. Representative Starr moves the dash twos into House Bill 2683. Is there a discussion? Is there objection to the dash two amendments? They're adopted. Representative Starr moves the dash three amendments into House Bill 2683. Is there discussion on the dash three amendments? Is there objection? They're adopted. Representative Starr moves dash four amendments into House Bill 2683. Is there discussion on the dash four amendments? Is there objection? They're adopted. Representative Starr moves the dash five amendments into House Bill 2683. Is there discussion? Representative Close.
Could you clarify what subsection three is saying there? I don't understand. It's saying that if the school facility project is the subject of an agreement that meets the requirements basically of the bill, then these particular laws do not apply. So the 332.155 sub 6, which is talking about competitive bidding applying to projects like this, does not apply. You don't have to go through competitive bidding. And then ORS Chapter 279 is just generally public contracting law. And so then that would not apply.
Further discussion on the dash fives? Is there objection to the dash fives?
Yes.
Okay. Objection noted. We've got an objection, so the clerk will call the roll on the dash five amendments.
No.
Aye.
Mr. Hudson?
No. Mr. Jensen?
No.
Mr. Snow?
Aye.
Mr. Morse? No. Mr. Willard?
Aye.
Mr. Jensen?
Aye.
Mr. Winter?
Aye.
Mr.
Perry?
Votes aye. Dash 5 are adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Starr.
Move House Bill 2683 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Starr moves House Bill 2683 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Beck.
So I want to, if I understand this, and Jeff, maybe you can help. So school district has a building with a bad roof, terrible roof. They go for a bond. Then under this bill, they would have to go for a bond measure to try to fix it first. Bond measure fails. Then they find a local community foundation, Elks Club, and lease the building. They have to formally lease the building. They have to enter into some kind of contract or some kind of, you don't have to transfer title. Is that correct, Cindy?
Representative Beck, actually, it says a requirement that if a school district transfers ownership, it says if they transfer ownership, then certain things happen.
So they would have to transfer title.
No.
No.
It allows them to do that, though.
Okay.
They could.
But if they don't want to transfer title, they could lease it. I mean, does the foundation, does the nonprofit have to have some kind of interest in the building in order to be involved? No.
Okay.
So then if the bond measure fails, district goes to the Elks, and under this law says, we want you guys to fix the roof. They can start fixing the roof. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck.
Step in there somewhere?
No, you're not missing a step. Actually, what you've just described is doable now,
mm-hmm.
and that's the position that the school boards took in that you wouldn't. This is not meant really for that type of an issue. This is meant for and I'll give you an example of the Lebanon School District that just closed three elementary schools, mm-hmm. two of which have serious physical problems.
Mm-hmm.
And this is meant for that type of an application where the entire project would be essentially turned over to a private foundation or the Elks or Hewlett-Packard Corporation if they felt it appropriate to do so. It would complete that project and transfer ownership back for a sum of money.
Mr. Chair, if I can. But it could be a roof, a terrible roof. It's got all, I mean, someone could say, we want to... we don't want to use contract labor to fix our roof. There's no other mechanism other than a failed attempt at a bond measure that would prevent a school district from just going out and using volunteer labor.
Mr. Chair and Representative Beck, that currently is allowable now. Yes, volunteers, and there are a couple of examples of that. A wing that was added on Sisters Elementary School, as I understand it, and a cafeteria that was out in Staten that was built by volunteers and so forth. Those types of projects are, in fact, doable now.
So I'm really just trying to figure out what this bill is doing that we can't already do then. So in what circumstances would... if you started to pay the Elks or the members who the Elks Club hires to fix the roof, is that when this bill is more applicable? I mean, what, when would you use this? And I'm missing something, clearly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, the scenario that I described to you previously about a building
mm-hmm.
that would entirely be turned over to a foundation, not for them to go out and hire people, but for volunteers to rebuild it. This is not only meant to do it at a cheaper cost,
mm-hmm.
but it's also meant to bring a community together, for a community to work together. And again, I specifically will bring to you the example of the Lebanon School District, who in 3 years has had two failed bond measures to try to address some extraordinarily problematic physical plant needs amongst their school district. And this is, again, a result of a massive unified school district that is put together that has a lot of older schools and they have real problems. And this is meant for that type of scenario. It's not meant for if volunteers want to put a wing onto a school or a roof onto a school, they don't have to go out for a bond measure. You can currently, they can just get together and raise donations, bring the materials in, and do it under current statute. This is meant, if you're going to do a more complete project, this facilitates that, codifies it in law. It's got to be done in a certain manner. It's got to be done in a certain time frame.
And if I follow up, would consideration be exchange, would this foundation pay the school district for the building while they have it in their possession under your scenario or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, that is allowable, yes.
But not required.
It is not required. It says transfers ownership.
Right.
It doesn't specify if that's leased, if that's given, or if it's paid for $1.
And the district could in turn receive the property back for free. They wouldn't have to pay for the costs incurred by the foundation.
What the bill says is that then the community foundation shall transfer the school facility back to the school district for an amount that does not exceed the cost of the school facility project plus 10%.
So they, like, good. The group of people who are working for the Elks, who have not gone through public contracting laws, they could then charge the district the cost, their costs, their labor, their hard costs, plus 10% above that for fun.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, that's not the intent. The intent is if whatever the local foundation, the Elks, whomever, could go out and raise money. And this is meant, again, to be a volunteer-based project. If an electrician or a plumber wants to come in and do work and they don't want to do it for free, but they're willing to do it at a discounted service, if they can't get building materials donated and they can buy them at cost or whatever price, that is what is meant to be under subsection C of that paragraph.
Representative Hobson, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I wasn't as confused until we started with this interaction.
It's my fault.
And but it is your fault. Although the Dash 5s had me worried that this was where we were going, that's why I voted against them. Let me do a scenario and see if we can... let's stick with the Elks and they're volunteering and they're building something. We can already do that under current law. There's no problem there.
That's correct.
So what we're doing here, and I am focusing on the Dash 5 because they're, I think, connected to the piece that Representative Beck was getting to. In effect, what this is doing is just making it so there is a way to have paid people do something without meeting the requirements, the contracting requirements. That's it, really, because you can already do it volunteer.
That's right.
Oh, it's a long time to get that out.
Hold on.
Reluctance from the bidding.
Another amendment, actually, since you already adopted in the Dash 3s that sort of figure into this discussion, is that what the Dash 3s do is that
there needs to be a requirement in the agreement that any amount that's received by the school or by the community foundation from the school district for a school facility project is then allocated as follows, and then 60% of that amount has to be used to start a new school facility project, and 40% is used for maintenance of an existing school facility. So that kind of figures into the discussion.
Representative Jensen.
Yeah, and carrying these scenarios out, let me, we've got hypothetical school here that has had a $500,000 worth of construction carried out, been remodeling and rebuilding it. And at this point, how does the school district get it back? The volunteer or association, whoever it happens to be that set this up, has $500,000 worth of hard costs that's in labor and wire and other things into this. They get the $500,000 plus 10% back. How does the school district come up with $550,000?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, the intent there, and again, I go back to the word intent, is that a $500,000 project may be within a school district's current maintenance budget. In that case, they would simply reimburse the foundation for that. If it was a smaller school district and that was a large amount of money, again, the intent is to show that a community can work together and everyone in a volunteer and bipartisan spirit will work together, and then the school district can go out and float a bond at a greatly reduced rate, demonstrating then to all of the community members that you can work together and everyone can be responsible, be efficient, and it's a worthwhile investment in the future.
Thank you, Representative. And that's what I was looking at. You know, how much reduced that's going to be, whether it's going to be 10, 15, 20% less than had the school district had to go out for the bond on it. They're still going to have to come back and get a bond if it's anything other than a very small project. If they haven't been able to get a bond once, there's no assurance they're going to get it a second time. So how are they going to get back in this pool?
Well, I don't think that they would. They certainly wouldn't relinquish title or ownership or possession of their building if they didn't think they had the money, and they just wouldn't do the project.
If they had the money, they would need to do that.
Right.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, districts that have, and again, I go back to the Lebanon district, they have a problem in their community. A very divisive issue is precisely what Representative Wilson had talked about.
They might have the money to do it at the lower rate when they don't have it to do it at...
Precisely. And that's what it boils down to. It really is going to be a variable situation. My suspicions are, Representative Jensen, Mr. Chair, is that you're looking at probably a 20-25% cost of what an original bond would be, depending on how much you can get donated in terms of funds, depending on how much labor is donated, depending on how much building materials are donated there, and depending on the nature of the repair work or the construction project. There are a great many variables. And it's meant to fill a need that a community has after they've exhausted all of their other avenues and do it at a greatly reduced cost.
Any further questions? Discussion? The motion before us is to move House Bill 2683 as amended by five sets of amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
May I?
Representative Morissette.
This is a tough one. I'm currently involved in a big fundraiser to build a community band pavilion in a park. And I'm asking, and I have personally contacted a lot of businesses who are going to be donating some of it at a reduced cost, a lot of labor to make that happen. And I think that's an excellent way to go. I guess the what we finally arrived at in my realization, which I kind of suspected, is that this can be viewed, and I don't think it's intended that, as a bypass of the Davis-Bacon Law. I think that could end up being the result of this, but I really like the idea of community involvement, and I'm hoping that, and I'm going to vote no, but I'm hoping that within the present law, we go to the community involvement. We get community people involved, and I don't see any reason why the school district can't go out and do that very thing themselves without using another corporation to do it. The idea is great. The mechanism, I think, is an end run, and we may as well just vote to repeal Little Davis-Bacon and be done with it.
Aye. Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Morissette, your point is well taken. However, that's the reason for the amendment requiring a failed bond measure. All of the stakeholders have an opportunity to get out there, including all of the unions that are, if they're in fact so concerned about this, they have an opportunity to go door to door in that neighborhood too, and in that school district, to pass this kind of a bond measure. And if they're not going to care enough about this issue to get out there and work hard to do it, and the bond measure fails, the need is still there. And if they're not going to step to the plate and be a part of the solution, then they ought to get out of the way.
Who's they?
If you're concerned, Representative Morissette, about Little Davis-Bacon issues, okay, is the overriding concern for your vote no, then your members or the members of the unions that would be concerned about that have every opportunity to get right out in front on a bond measure like this so that their members can get the work to do this, which is still the proper way to achieve this. Make no mistake about it. Again, this is only a fallback. It's nothing more than that. The need is still there, and we have to fill the need in some fashion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will give a courtesy vote, but I do have some concerns. I believe that we can currently do what you want to do within existing legislation, and it's just, not getting in all the scenarios. Here in Salem, we just finished a huge project that was about $4 million with all volunteer and community involvement, and I understand the need for stimulating the community, but I think that we can do it within. And I'm also concerned about something else, that putting that in there, it may be a little too restrictive when you really begin to look at requiring that you have to have a failed bond.
Right.
And so with that, I'm just offering that I will give you the courtesy, but I do have some serious concerns.
Representative Jensen, you have another comment?
Yes, I'm going to vote no, but I'd like to let Representative Noe makes a very persuasive argument.
Too persuasive.
Those Tony Robbins.
Oh, no, anyway.
Tony Robbins classes he attends every 2 years.
Ah. Mr. Chair, point of personal privilege. I have never walked on coals in my life. My feet are much too tender.
Well, I'm going to vote yes on this bill, and I think it's an innovative idea, and I think that it is necessary to do this because it does help us to eliminate the competitive bidding, which we can't do already. And I think that allows a school district to, in fact, as you've said, fall back when they may not have $650,000 to do a project. They may be able to get $550,000, especially if people see that it's really being done efficiently. And I think this is something really good for local communities to get behind and be enthusiastic for. So I'll be voting yes and supporting it. Let me just restate once again that the motion before us is to move House Bill 2683 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
No.
Aye.
Hoffman? No.
Jensen?
No.
Aye.
Morissette? No.
Starr?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Winters?
Aye.
Terry?
Votes aye. Motion is passed. Representative Croft will carry the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee.
Take your shoes off.
My holy ground.
And I'm just going to...
Cold.
For the committee's... information. House Bill 2548, which we've got on the agenda today, I'm going to set that over. The department and the state school board has done quite a bit of work here just recently on assessments and the potential of moving assessments and timelines, and I'm going to have a discussion with them before we proceed with this bill, which we have had hearings on. So that bill will be set over. House Bill 2549, in deference to Representative Beck, who's left again, we're going to have the department come. Now, I invited the department to come and discuss this bill on Monday, and they didn't have any comments to make. After the testimony on Wednesday, they asked to be able to be heard, and so we're going to have them Wednesday, so that bill will be set over till Wednesday. So that was going to give us 14 bills to deal with on Wednesday, because we're taking them off the schedule today. So we will adjourn today and then come back. So I ask that you all plan your schedules to be here for the full time Wednesday. We'll start at 1 promptly, unless there's a problem on the floor, and then we'll move through all these bills. We'll have a short bit of testimony from the Department of Education and some people from Portland on 2549, and other than that, it'll just be work sessions. Representative Jensen.
Mr. Chair, is this one of those statements, pay me now or pay me later?
On.
Time.
I'm just asking for courtesy to be here on time, and then also till 4:30 on Wednesday and again on Friday. There's nothing more to come before the committee. We are adjourned.